Welcome from the DC area, Mike J.
I'm Mike, an addict. I just thank God that I'm clean today, right? Because I come a long way. I've been clean 2,070 days, one day at a time. I ain't think I can get the first 24, right? Because I was hard-headed, right? You know, I came here to get the monkey off my back, right? But as I stayed, I realized the circus was still in town as far as all them character defects. The program taught me that, right? And I heard everything y'all said, like, keep coming back, it gets better. All your dreams can come true. Shit just get better. You know, I got tired of eating shit on a shingle. You know, I got tired of going to jail and they put me in this big ass, balloon ass orange suit, jumpsuit, and they call me straight shooter when I'm in jail. You know, my nickname was straight shooter. But as I stayed around, I learned that I'm powerless over people, places, and things. I can't make nobody treat me the way I want them to treat me. I can't make them loan me their money when I need it. I can't make them love me the way I want them to love me. You know? And I used to a lot of that shit, man. You know, I asked you for some money, you tell me, no, I'll get you back. But I was killing myself, man. You know, I'm the addict who was on that corner when you went to work. I was on the attic, was on that corner when you came home from work. And I was on the attic when you went back to work, asking you for your dollars. Washing people's cars and shit, man. Going to McDonald's for them youngins and making sure their french fries coat was still warm, man. And they gave me crumbs and shit, man. I don't have to break nobody's antenna off their car no more. I ain't got to ask you for no fresh choy. I ain't got to burn my goddamn lip no more because my stem this small. With a rubber band on that motherfucker, rubber band pop, all my shit fly out. Y'all don't hear me, man. Needing fresh ashes and shit to poke holes in a can and shit, man. So now, it's been a long road, right? I got tired of my mother walking around 2 o'clock in the morning in her nightgown with her pocketbook on her shoulder because I'm in the house. Telling me, get out her basement smoking crack because I opened her basement up as a crack house. It can be 2 feet of snow on the ground, and it's about 6 different entrances in the alley, and all the footsteps going straight to my mother's basement. My mother telling me she hate me, man. A little 3-year-old niece telling me, Uncle Mike, is you a crackhead? Then I get mad at the mother. What the hell are you talking about telling my business to this kid for? But what part I play in that shit? I was a crackhead. Crack smoker, call it what you want. I was it. My bottom got a basement. You know, the streets rejected me in the end. I got tired of getting stabbed and shot at, man. Going to jail to find out don't nobody love my ass, and I'm working for $2.50 a month. Cleaning the damn shower curtains and cleaning, scrubbing toilets and shit in jail and shit, because I have to do it because that's your detail. Don't nobody love you, man. And that's messed up when you walking in this world and don't nobody love you. No, they love you, right? But you hurt them so bad. With the shit I was doing, made them not trust me and not want me around their ass, man. And it hurt, man. You know, I'm walking around thinking I'm all right. I'm gonna smoke crack for the rest of my life. Singing little jingles and shit. I made jingles. I'm gonna smoke till I die! But in the beginning, right? I smoked it. At the end, it smoked me. I'm already small. Imagine me on crack, getting high. Slim, I'm telling you, man. Straight shooter. Didn't want to take my shoes off, y'all. Because my damn socks was stinking. Walking the street day and night, man. The youngest would give me a package and whip my ass at the end of the day because I done smoked that shit. Then gave me a package the next day. Do that shit again. It was a vicious cycle. I fucking lived to use crack. That was my mission. Gotta get a wake up. After that wake up, it's on. All day, all night. Smoking good, y'all. But the pain got so great, man, that at the end of the story, right, I ate out a goddamn trash can. I'll never forget this. People who know me know this story, right? That shit bring tears to my eyes if I think about it, right? Because I didn't have to live like an animal, man. I can't blame that shit on my mother and father because I wasn't raised like that. I always wanted to fucking fit in. Always wanted to be the class clown. Always wanted to be the one to tote the pistol. Because I suffered from a small man's complex, so I wanted to be respected. In the wrong goddamn way. I was married right at the time, right? And me and his wife owned a beauty salon, right? I went in that shop, I took the dryers, I took the first dollar we had in the frame. I took the money out the soda machine, the bubble gum machine, the peanut machine, because I had the keys to everything. And sold that shit for some crumbs. Them dryers cost $1,000 a piece, and I sold three of them for $80. Well, I got my ass divorced for that one, right? Then I caught myself going in the program, right? Because I'm a retread. This is my second time around, right? So I go in Salvation Army, you know. They let me drive their trucks. I'm stealing their shit. I'm selling their stuff. I go for a pickup and never bring it back to the yard. I mean, I carried them behaviors. I wasn't using, but I carried the behavior. Then I got married again. She left me for a woman. That shit might be funny now, right? That shit was not funny. A woman take my woman. And I thought I was a hell of a nigga. Hell of a man. Excuse me, people. I thought I was a hell of a man. Now, right, I used like hell to that. That was my excuse. But this time I came around, they told me I have no more excuses. The dog can die, the cat can crawl over in the corner somewhere and croak. The fish can be floating up top, my mom can die, my daughter can die. I don't have to use no more. Because I love life on this side of the fence. Life is good to me, even through my indifferences. Life is good without a drink or a drug. Man, when I came here, y'all told me I could have anything, right? So I wanted to be like the sponsees and the the predecessors, right? I won't go out there, buy 3 cars, house, apartment, and shit. But I forgot to ask the predecessor how the hell you keep it. Now we talk about unmanageability, right? I mean, I'm working 2 jobs and money going up in bills. I don't have nothing. I live from paycheck to paycheck, and I got $20 to last me to the next week, and I smoke cigarettes. Then trying to raise a daughter on top of that. Because now I was a single parent at one time, you know? And that was hard, man. Because I didn't have 5 minutes to spend with a kid. Because I was too busy chasing that thing, man. You know, I can get clean for other people. Yeah, for the wife, I get clean. That's why I tell a newcomer, be careful when you get in a relationship. You know, if you ain't got a foundation, and when that shit falls through, and shit don't go your way, because we used to our feelings. Heartache is a good one to use too. But if you don't have a foundation, y'all, to withstand the pain that you can endure and not cause anomalies, clean and sober. If you ain't got one, please find one. You know, so I don't want to live like an animal no more, y'all. Thank you, God. Because it was a rocky, long road, man. Now, as I'm clean and sober, right? We talking about behavior now, right? Now, when I come here, you know, I can buy me some stuff now. Smelling myself. You know what I mean? Trying to get 7 or 8 girlfriends and shit. Because they got nice asses and they winked at me. And I'm making every last one of them think it's all about them. Living in pain over here because I'm suffering for real. Because now I'm hurting people. Now I'm using people. Not a drug, I'm using people. Until one day. You know, I was messing with this female, right? You know, what we had, we did a little something. Right? And one day, her ex-boyfriend, bank statements and tax statements and all kind of his money problems coming to my address, right? So I'm like, what the fuck? So I cut her off, right? One day I seen her, well, she was looking good. I wasn't seeing nobody. So we did a little something. And the next day she came with some bags trying to move in. Right now I'm player, right? So I'm trying to be straight up, right? You can't stay here. I'm expecting company. That woman got to tear my apartment up. She tore my apartment up. I was scared. I called the police, right? Because now the program kicking in, right? I ain't got to put my hands on you. I can call the police. Time the police came. She was red, right? Light skin. So she had this rag in her hand, right? So time the police came, she told the police that I kicked her in her face and that I'm molesting my 2-year-old daughter. Right? And they locked me up, and I called the police. The police took a picture. Oh, that looked fresh. That's like a fresh wound. Took him pictures of it. I'm like, uh-uh. So as I'm in the back of the police car, right, now I'm begging the police, please let me call my sister so she can come get my daughter so they won't put my daughter in child protective service, right? So he allowed me to do that, right? But as I'm in the back of the police car, you know I'm mad as shit, right? She coming outside my apartment with a duffel bag of my shit. It was so heavy, she had to drag it. I said, I'm going to get her ass kicked. That's the old behavior, right? We went to court for about 3-4 months and shit, right? And then, you know, every time she got on the stand, she had changed her testimony and all that. Police had to stick their, the doctors had to stick their fingers all up my little daughter to see if I was molesting her or not. It hurt, man. But the program taught me, he said, my sponsor said, what part you play in it? All right, you got that. So now I gotta pray for her. Are my prayers really sincere at the time? Because some days it's better than others. Because that hurt. Hurt people hurt people. Now you play with somebody goddamn feelings, Mike, you better expect something. So I had to learn not to play with nobody's feelings for my selfish ass reasons. So I had to buckle down. I had to let the program kick all the way. No change, no change. No change, no change, y'all. So they said you gotta change everything. I mean, everything. Not everything, everything. From their behavior all the way to all them character defects, man. And I know what my character defects are. If you know yourself, you know what your character defects are. At one time, I thought I was powerless over my behavior. I would smack the shit out you and say, look what you made me do. I smacked the shit out of my boss one day. Y'all. I was working with the Metro then, right? You know, I had shared some of my NA stuff with him. And he broke my anonymity. So I said, you are wrong. He said, you can't tell me what to say to my mom. I said, bah! That man picked the phone up. Metro Police was on my ass. Escort me off the premises. Like I'm saying, dang! Now I always sing that song after I get in trouble. Why? God damn. Shit. Mike, get out the way. Because you are an accident waiting to happen. So you can be unmanageable without a drink or a drug. You don't need a drug to be unmanageable. You can rob Peter to pay Paul. I can pay half my bills, but when that bill come again, it's double. Life is hard all by itself. Mike, you don't have to help complicate your own life. Stop answering your own questions. Stop sponsoring yourself. Because when I first came here, I did 3 cycles of steps by myself. Because I didn't want to tell my business to nobody. Because I had a bad experience, right, with a sponsor. I know the program don't work that way, but if I told him I stabbed somebody, 20 people come and ask me who the hell I stabbed. The program don't work that way, though, y'all. Don't get me twisted. The program is not designed like that. But we still got some messed up people, and we powerless over them. So you got to be careful who you tell your business to if you don't want to come back to you. And I'm one of them addicts who care about my business coming back. I'm not the addict who say, I don't care you climb a tree with it. I care. Because you program tell you to free myself. If I don't get all this old garbage out of me, I can't get no new help. If I can't free myself 100%, how can I recover 100%? The program is delicious, y'all. This program is simply delicious compared to where I come from. I can save money today. Good God, run. I can help another human being without strings attached today. I can give back today, man. I can even give some experience now. Because I'm the addict who had to go through the hard knocks to get where I'm at today. Because I couldn't take a simple suggestion. I'm the addict who keep going around the corner and falling that same goddamn hole. In recovery. So don't get it twisted. In recovery. Man, I'm glad I got my mother back in my life, y'all. My mother is so proud of me. She look at me and say, "Think of my chocolate star." I can walk in the room and say, "Think of my chocolate star." Now I can go and kiss my mother today and hug my mother and tell her I love her, man. Because I was too ashamed to do that when I was high. I was ducking her. She was the only one there for me in my addiction, man. All the wives I talked about, all the friends I talked about. You know, those friends, they was nothing but fucking pallbearers. Y'all don't hear me. They wasn't no goddamn friend. If you ain't had no crackers, get the hell out my house. Where my money? I ain't had no friends out there. I got friends today. Yes, sir. I love y'all. If it wasn't for y'all, I wouldn't be here where I'm at today. The newcomer, the predecessor, I need every last one of you. Because y'all let me know, man, that I don't have to do this by myself. You know, I can pull up on all my friends and tell them exactly what's going on with me. And with them, I don't have to sugarcoat it. I can tell them from my heart where I'm at. How many more minutes I got? 7. I got 7 minutes. I want to talk about my 20-year-old I got, right? I got allowed a 21-year-old, right, to go through her own pain. Now I feel what my mother felt when I was dogging myself out, when I was killing myself, right? I can get mad all I want, and I love her because, God damn, I know what's happening. Right now, she at the party. I went to the party when I was 16, but I ain't come home till I was 40. I don't want my baby to go through that, and it hurt. But I have to allow her her own pain. Ain't nothing I can do, man. That shit hurt. Now I see what my family went through. When you don't think you hurting other people in your mess, you got another thing coming. You hurting your kids. You hurt your parents. You hurt everyone who loves you, man. And you think, because I take my show on the road, I'm all right. I took my circus on the road because I got tired of my mother kicking me out of her basement. So I ended up in Northeast somewhere in no man's land where I let them rent the Mercedes out for one 8-ball and they never came back. I couldn't go home and say, baby, guess what? That's when I had to turn myself back in, right? But as I was walking the street, hold on. As I was walking the street after I did that, I was hungry, y'all. So now I'm ashamed to go home. I'm ashamed to be around anybody who don't get high. So I seen a McDonald's bag in the trash can. I picked it up. It had a little weight on it. I said, oh, shit, I got me a half a cheeseburger or something, right? As I put my hand in the bag, it was fucking Pooper Scoop. I put my hand in fucking Pooper Scoop. I was in so much denial, I had to smell my hands 4 times. That's when I walked my ass from Howard University to DC General and say, I'm gonna kill myself if you don't let me in this door. From that point, life's been great. So that's why I come to meetings. I need to hear them keep telling me to bring my ass back. I need people who pull me up when they see me doing crazy shit. I need y'all in my life. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. From the 24-hour person all the way to the predecessor. From A to Z, I need you. In every aspect of my life, I need y'all. I want to free myself 100% because I want to recover 100%. I want to get away from all them bad behaviors and all them character defects that keep getting my ass late. You know, I don't want to have to live like an animal no more, y'all. Living in the wilderness by myself. Dead man walking. I love y'all. I'm going to keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Mike. Next, we have Bob S., who is from Almost Heaven by way of the Dulles Corridor, by way of the D.C. area.
An addict named Bob, and it's an honor to be here.
As y'all leave, please have respect for the speaker and Narcotics Anonymous. Leave silently.
Like Mike, I really appreciate the predecessors that were here before me because I need y'all. You don't need me, I need you. And that brings me into the first tradition. We got to respect where we're at. If anybody goes out and does any breaking and enterings into the stores around here, you don't. They ask you why you're in Ocean City, don't tell them because you're at the Narcotics Anonymous meeting. That's right. You know, and that's happened. I ain't going to say where it's happened, but it has happened. And so we, you know, there was people when I got to my first meeting, and that was 10,735 days ago. That's why I'm thanking you all, because, you know, there's one thing that I know that I need to keep coming back, and I'm very grateful for the first step, because that's where it all began. My life was unmanageable, and like as people mentioned, that my other speaker, Mike, you know, my first wife, I got left. You're not unique, man. I got left for another woman, too. And that shit hurts.
Yes, sir.
But you know what? I had to go on with my life. I was still using back then. And we ended up getting back together. And that contributes to the pain, the point of desperation for me to bring me into these rooms. And we were living in the basement of my mother's house. And I remember babysitting her for the greater part of the day, and I got tired of doing that, so I said, I ain't doing this no more. I'm going to go out and take care of me. Started getting sick, so I went out, did what I needed to do. I came back, and she was dead. She had gone into a coma. I called my mom downstairs. My mom comes downstairs, and she's, you know, looking at her. I said, we need to call somebody. So we called an ambulance. Her brother was a EMT at the time. Guess who shows up? He gets pronounced his own sister dead, and you know, that's just one of those. Did I stop then? No, I still had some more time. Thank you. I still had to do some more research out there, and life was catching up with me. I don't know if anybody can relate to that. They realized that I was on two methadone programs, and one in PG County and one down at DC General. They said, you got to go, which actually ended up saving my life, because they said, and the other one, you're going to detox off it. So I come off of 240 milligrams of methadone in 30 days, and I never made 30 days. I came down here crying and screaming the blues the days I was able to make it down there, and let them know they were killing me. Actually, they were saving me, and I'm grateful for that today. And so what they did is they put me in enough desperation where I ended up on the basement floor in fetal position, clamping down hard enough to cut toenails, and was still shitting myself. And I finally came to conclusion that I need to ask somebody for some help. And so I asked my younger brother, I said, I need to get to the hospital. And I heard about Montgomery General, and I knew there was only two places at the time that I thought. I found out there was more later, but Montgomery General and St. Elizabeth's, well, that knocked the first one right out the back. I ain't going to St. E's. I lived right down the street from that for many years. I'm not doing that. And plus, I didn't believe in the drug program they had at the time. I was going down there picking up girls on work release programs, taking them to massage parlors to work. And they all thought I was a really good guy by doing that. And so these are things I needed to deal with later down the road. But it was all part of what I needed to do in order to get where I needed to be. And so I asked my brother to give me a ride, and he agreed to give me a ride halfway and dropped me off on George Avenue in 495 in a November rain, And I was grateful. I remember that. I was just really grateful that he said he would give me a ride. And I don't know about you all, but I kind of wore out all my welcomes and my gifts and my favors. Nobody wanted to do shit for Bob anymore. And so when I got that, when I got to that part where I stuck out my thumb, which was another form of asking for some help, you know, I had somebody actually pull over and pick me up. You know, I was looking slim and trim myself, you know. And not like now. I'm working on that shit today, too, man. And I've been eating salads for 2 weeks, so I'm working on it. But because we got to, you know, I got to take care of myself mentally, physically, and spiritually, and that hasn't changed today. I still got to do those things. So when I was standing out there, and I was really surprised that somebody actually picked me up. You know, I was so thin that I couldn't even wear a belt anymore. I had to wear like an extension cord, and if anybody needs, hopefully you don't need to do that. But they work good. They're very adjustable, you know. And you can tighten them up as needed. So this guy, not by coincidence, he takes me to the front door of Montgomery General, you know, and drops me off. I was grateful for that. When I got into Montgomery General, they were talking about not having any bed space, and I had to beg for some more help. I said, I can't leave. I can't, you know, I'm hurting. I can't, you know. And they said, you know, we'll get you a bed place and get you a spot. So when later on that night, the counselor came to me, and a lot of people know who this person was, Storm and Norman, they used to call him back in the day. He's no longer with us, but he said that he was going to take me down to meeting, and I needed to put these pajamas on, you know. And I said, I thought I was coming here to take a rest and shit, you know. And so when we did get down to it, you know, I didn't have not a clue what kind of a meeting he was talking about, but I was going to follow him because I was willing to do anything anybody was, you know, asked me to do. And I'm still that way. And so when we're marching down to this first meeting that I ever went to, I don't know about you all, but everybody has, at least I did, had somebody that I compared myself to. And I always said that if I ever got as bad as this person, I would do something about my problem, you know. And so when I got down to, first of all, it's humbling to wear a pair of them pajamas anyway. One size fits absolutely nobody. You got your little plastic band on, your ass is hanging out the back. That shit was not funny, you know. I wanted two robes to hide my ass, you know. And so anyway, we get into this meeting, and the counselor calls over and says, hey, Dennis, come on over here. I got a really sick puppy I need you to talk to. And Dennis was that person that I compared myself to. So I knew that right then and there. There was something going on in these rooms that I needed, and that this was not a coincidence. So when I got to that point and Dennis came over and talked to me, he'd been missing him, you know, like 2 years. Nobody knew what happened to him. What it was is he changed his playgrounds, playmates, and playthings. He just didn't come around anymore to the places that I used to go. And I was grateful for that because I seen that it works. And you know what? He wasn't skinny. He looked good. And he looked like he'd been doing something that I wanted. That's the attraction part of this. And I was very attracted to what was going on in the rooms. And my very first NA meeting was down at 12th and S Street. When I get into this, when the shuttle bus takes you down here and the guys down at 12th and U were calling me by name, I knew I couldn't. I said, all these NA meetings in these areas, man. So this shit's, you know, I couldn't do that because there was people down there that knew me, that wanted me, and there was somebody that actually got shot in the head because they thought it was me. And so needless to say, I hung out and hid out over in Northern Virginia, and don't regret that either. And that's what I needed to do in order to get what I got today. And I realized that this is a day at a time program, and I know that we're in here for the moment. And I can't tell you, you know, that things have been great the whole time. The majority of the time has been really, really good. You know, I like to bestow upon people some hope But I had this in 2008. My mom died. My dad died. And my dog died, and not all in that order. But my mom was first to go, and a friend of mine was celebrating 20 years that night. And I remember, I don't know how people know when they're getting ready to die, but they said, "Tell my kids to come on. It's time." So we all come running up there, and well, that was it. I mean, you know, and you know, the good part about it was is when she did die, I didn't have no regrets. It was actually a spiritual thing. She'd seen me stay clean for X amount of time. Although she, you know, her being a mom, she'd still want to know if I go to meetings. "You still go to them meetings, don't you?" "Yeah, Mom." I remember inviting her to my first anniversary. I said, "Could you come on down and help me celebrate?" She said, "Celebrate? Oh, my God, don't do that, please." You know? I knew that word had meant a little something different to her than it did to me. So I said, no, not like that. So when I got her calmed down a little bit, told her that's not what celebrate means, you know, I told her what we do in there, she's told me, she says, "You know, you ain't doing any damn thing you shouldn't have been doing all along anyway, you know," and that's Mom. And I never, ever got her to go down to a meeting, you know. And she always said, "I wish you'd go back to church." I said, "My church? I go to church almost every day, Mom." She says, "You do?" I said, "Church basements. Most of the meetings are in basements." She says, "Oh, you know what I mean." But when she was actually on her deathbed, I'm not going to make this meeting about moms, but, you know, this is important to me because she put up a lot of shit. Not that any of y'all's moms never put up with a lot of shit, or dads or family members. That was all part of my story, too, when she, when I remember knocking on the door of the house when I was still using, and I remember walking up on the house, watching the blinds being closed, radios being turned off or what have you, no noise coming, you knock, and nobody answers the door. They didn't, you know, that shit hurt. That hurt. And so, you know, it. These are the things that I have to remember. We all got that story. But, you know, I have to remember it because I need to let other people know that they don't need to live like that. Now, if you're in here and you've never gone back out again, you don't need to go back out again. Relapse is not a part of my story. And it's not a bad thing if it is, but it's just not a part of it. So when my mom was sitting on her deathbed, and I mentioned, and my brother-in-law told me that she hadn't ate in a while, to see if you could get her to eat something. I went down there and I was talking to her, and I knew she loved onions, and I was talking about French onion soups. I was trying to use that trigger, you know. She said, "Oh, that sounds good." I said, I'll go down to the store and buy you some French onion soup. She says, "Yeah, do that." So when I told my sister, they said, "No, it's got too much sodium in it. Don't do that." So I said, okay, you know, I didn't argue the fact. But anyway, I ended up making it myself. So when I'm sitting there telling her that I made this soup myself, she looks at me and she goes, "Bobby, if you could only see your lying face, you know you didn't make this soup. This is good, you know." So she actually died thinking I'm a damn liar, but she's really not. It wasn't long after that. But you know, I am a damn liar. I'm a thief, and I'm all those things. And I could be like that. I still have. That's why I'm in here. I got to be put in check. I got a sponsor. I got a home group. You know, I got all those things. I got people that care about me today, and don't want to see me go down that road. You know, this is a very diverse group of people we're here. You know, that's gathering here, and you know, all makes of life. You know, and that's what makes it beautiful. That's what makes it me keep coming back. I need y'all. And, you know, to say that, you know, that I've been blessed, we'd be cutting it kind of short, man. You know, I've been blessed. I've had a lot of clean time, a lot of days. I've moved around, and I go to meetings no matter where I go. I got clean in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, but I moved out to West Virginia, the Almost Heaven area, in 1987. And they got good recovery out there. And, you know, I still hang out there. I put down there. I'm all over the place. You know, I'm a professional commuter, you know. I got an 07 car. Just turned over 160,000 miles, so I'll be rolling. And with no regrets, you know, I got a place out here too, and it's just, that's how I know people up there. When I come up here, I go to meetings. When I go on vacation, I go to meetings. You know, when I was in France, we was in, doing a little tour. I go to meetings. I had a meeting list with me. You know, so no matter where I go, I still go to meetings. I know that I'm powerless over a lot of things, and that I'm still have this addiction. That shit don't rest, man. And you know, by me asking for help, I ended up in Monaco, France, asking somebody to show me where this meeting was, and they said, "We'll actually show you where this meeting is. We're getting off duty," and it was three cops. They're on motorcycles. Now I've been in lineups in central lockup, man. But I ain't never had nobody give me a police escort to a meeting. They had their lights on and everything. I guess at the time they thought it was kind of funny because, you know, I showed them a little sense of humor. They said, "Hey, you're American." I go, "At the time Clinton was in office." I go, "Yeah, I'm personal friends of Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, you know." And I don't know if I should have broke their anonymity, but anyway. They thought that was funny, and they ended up giving me a police escort with the lights and the whole bit. Me and the wife just couldn't believe it, you know. So, you know, not in a million years could I have had ever thought that something like that could happen to me. You know, I probably never will again. I don't know, but the possibilities of staying clean and the shit that's come my way, you know. And it's a direct result of putting my butt in one of these chairs. I call that the physical challenge. And that's why the meeting place is very important to me. We had just lost our meeting place. We're in search of now to find another place to meet. And, you know, we'll survive because we got a group of people that's united. And I'm grateful for that. And we want the old spot back in the same location. So we could draw the same crowd. This is a program of attraction, and you know. And I also know that if the people can't find their way to these meetings, if it's not there, well, I know what would probably happen to me. I don't know how long it would take, but I'd go back and live that same way I was living before, and I don't want that. Life has been wonderful. Life has been unpredictable. The journey is what I don't know what tomorrow brings, but I still I'm still curious. I still want that. I know that the people that I used to run around with, they're either three things: either in jail, they're in some institution, of course, or they're dead, or they're in the rooms of recovery. And I don't see too many of them in the rooms, but there are a few of us. And I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to be able to get up here and talk about some of these things. You know, when I first came around, they didn't have that many meetings of Narcotics Anonymous. I had to venture the other way, and I have no regrets. They didn't even have a workbook at that time. Although I have did the steps, and I did pick up the workbook when it did come out, and I have worked the workbook, first step, and all the other steps that's in that book, and they're pain in the ass. I don't know if anybody done that, you know, or gone through that. But it's every time that I work with a sponsee, and I get to do them all over again, you know, because I'm not going to sit there and let them spill the guts out and me not share something about what's going on with me. That's part of the process. And the ugliness and the peace and the you know, just what we need to do in order to keep doing what we do so we can get what we got. And I'm grateful for that. I truly am. You know, when my mom did die, you know, the slate was clean. You know, I didn't have any regrets. I had some brothers that were crying that I mean, we all cried, but for different reasons. And mine were all selfish. It was just that I wouldn't be able to put my arms around my mom and hug her anymore. I wouldn't be able to tell her that I love her. But that is true to a certain degree. I could still tell my mom I love her. And I could still tell the people that I've had to bury in here in the fellowship, if you stick around, you'll have to bury people. This disease kills people. It's ugly, it's nasty, but it can also, I've done nothing but benefit from it. And I have no regrets coming in and sticking and staying. The spiritual side of it is that it's opened up a whole other world for me to look at a different way of looking at things. And, I need to be able to be diverse. That's what this convention's about diversity being our strength. And I see room for improvement, just like anything, there can always be some improvement. And that includes myself. Not perfect, and I'd like to see more young people's groups. A lot of people that I hang out with aren't very young, but there are a lot. But I do have some people that are, just coming around and they're like 16. And some stay and some don't. And, it's killer disease and you don't have to go back out. That's my observation. You don't need to do what others have done before you. One of my sponsees' son just went out and tried it one more time, and found him on a bed in San Francisco in a hotel. He'd been there for 2 days, and the cycle is parents ain't supposed to bury their children, and the cycle with this disease is they don't give a fuck. If it can bury you, it wants you. All my triggers are not of when times are bad. My shit, when I start thinking about using, is when times are good. When I got the pocket full of money, good paycheck, things are going really, really good. It's the only time I ever, so far, have entertained a thought of using. And thank God for sponsors and for people in these rooms, because when I first came around, man, you all got it good. We got it good today. Cell phones. It's a good way of keeping that connection. When I first came around, you had to do like this. You needed to call somebody. And, so we all knew where we were going to meet. Regardless of what meeting we went to, we had a place that we used to hang out, which was the meeting after the meeting. And that was very necessary for me, It was, that's what I needed. And today I can say that hasn't really changed too much. The only thing has changed is I've gotten older and I ain't staying out till 3 in the morning anymore. I can't do it. Sorry. I just can't do it, But it's a hell of a long way coming to come where I've came from the times that people way back in the day was trying to tell me there was a problem there. And I remember when I was 11 years old, I was standing up in Marlboro and before a judge, and the judge was telling me there was a problem here. I mean, I couldn't even dress myself back then, man, because when he was looking at me, he was looking at a guy who was dressed in a lime green outfit. And lime green in 1965 was not in style, And then I top it off with a pair of lime green suede shoes. So, needless to say, he put me away for 30 days for mental observation. And the fact is I was crazy. There has been sanity restored to me. The direction I have is positive. If I lose that direction, I have enough people that if I say I'm going to do something, I still like to make plans. I like to say that I'm going to be somewhere. And guess what? I'm there, you know. Also, the addict side of me says, you know, would you like to speak at one of the workshops? I'm like, hell no, I don't want to do that. And, you know, but I said, yeah. My mind was saying no, but my mouth said, yeah, I'll do that.
How much time I got?
Okay. I'm going to wrap this up by saying that, you know, it's us, the people, that make this program attract. It's what we do and what we say. If I say I'm going to be somewhere, I'm there. I show up. I try to practice integrity. That is not the way I was taught. If I always had something else I had on an agenda. If I had said I was going to be somewhere back in the day, it was because you had something I wanted. And you know what? You all still have something I want. And I'm glad that I'm clean today, and I'm glad that I have the opportunity to give back. However so small or whatever, it's good to be clean today, and I want to thank you.
Can we please have the closing circle with the serenity prayer, please?